Hey, it's Karen Hunter from the Karen Hunter Show on SiriusXM Urban View. Here's a highlight from today's show. Joining us, the author of Eartha and Kit, A Daughter's Love Story in Black and White. Let me welcome the president of Eartha Kit Productions and, of course, simply Eartha, the one and only Kit Shapiro. Hey, long time no see.
Thank you. Long time no see is right. Boy, we've lost a lot of time, and it was a long time before that. So here we are, though.
How are everyone in your life? Because it's been since the pandemic, we haven't even talked or chatted. How are things?
I mean, you know, we fared okay. You know, it wasn't, I have to be honest, you know, it was a tough time. I think I struggled with it the most, I think, of everyone in my family. I was very depressed by it. I kind of, you know, felt very defeated and angry and a lot of different things, as I'm sure many people can relate. But you know, we're coming through, and hopefully we'll see a brighter future.
Mm. So you did do something during this pandemic, something you've been working on, it seems, for a while. I know we've talked about it, and now it's here. You've given birth to this book. Walk us through the process and the most rewarding part of Eartha and Kit.
Wow. Well, I mean, I found it, deciding to, you know, undertake a writing a book during the pandemic, I'm not sure. It just sort of happened. The publisher wanted to deliver the book for a Mother's Day release in, you know, 2020. And the pandemic happened to hit at that time. And it was a lot. It was really, really challenging, physically challenging to turn over and deliver a book. We had a very tight deadline. I had a fabulous in Patty Levy, and she, thank God, she helped keep me on track and focused, because as I've learned and I have newfound respect for authors, it's really hard to write chapter after chapter after chapter and not keep repeating yourself. And it's also hard. I'm very sarcastic, and it's really hard to write sarcasm without sounding like an asshole. So, you know, that was very challenging. And the pandemic was made it even harder, I think, just because emotionally I was in a struggling place in moments. But that being said, as my daughter said to me and my husband said to me, you know, if you don't finish and you give up on this, you know, are you going to regret that? And I, you know, said yes. And so my daughter said, well, then you just got to suck it up, Mom, and keep moving forward. That's all you got to do. And that's, you know, what I did. And it's hard to recount, you know, I mean, my mother and I had such an incredible relationship and very, very special. And I think the most rewarding piece of writing this book is the sharing that part of her that people don't necessarily know, the part of her who was the mother, the part of her that was the, you know, the woman who liked to be home and liked to be in her garden and you know, her philosophy on life as a human being and how she, and the lessons that she imparted on me. That to me is the most rewarding, and to hear people who could say, on the one hand, they didn't relate, you know, they didn't know, but also for people who can relate to, you know, to having someone in their life that they cared about that same way, or to have someone in their life who had, you know, who maybe said similar, you know, quote unquote kidisms, or, you know, coined phrases like my mother did. And who also, you know, they looked up to, or maybe they wanted to look up to. So it's been rewarding on many, many different levels. And mm-hmm. I'm truly blessed and grateful that that I was, you know, was able to see the end.
Uh-huh. Now, I was going to say, it is hard to write anyway to begin with, right? But during the pandemic, it's worse. But I was wondering, you know, how do you also write about somebody who's your mother on the one hand, but for so many of us is just larger than life, like, you know, an icon, right? And I think about this because I think, you know, there are other people who are going to come to the book expecting to see a certain kind of thing. And what would you say to them that this is the reason why you need to read my book about my mother, you know, because you needed to figure out this thing about her?
I think because people like we are often surprised at how incredibly insightful she was, mm-hmm. and how really, really spiritual and deep and connected to her, to the universe and the world around us, from, you know, from the earth, literally the earth, the soil, planting, you know, eating what you put, to, you know, to speaking up, you know, standing up for your rights and having your voice heard. And how as a single woman of color during a time which, you know, was not easy on many levels, but I think especially, you know, from her perspective, she would say, you know, she had nobody, she had no family, she had no, you know, support system really. But she just believed in herself and believed that, you know, her voice was worth, you know, having, being able to speak out. She literally, she took it very literally that we have the freedom of speech. And when someone would ask how she felt about something, she assumed they really wanted to hear her opinion, and she gave it often.
Yes,
sometimes,
she did.
Sometimes it didn't always work well to her benefit, but she didn't. It didn't stop her either.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she got, some would say, whitelisted, and you know, her income was stopped because she spoke out against the war. She was very mm-hmm. vocal around racial issues, which is very, you know, a lot of people don't understand how fiercely she fought. You write about in a book about the South African trip that you took, because she took you everywhere, and yeah. how, you know, in these segregated spaces, you know, she made sure to not be quiet. Talk a little bit yeah. about that.
I think that she, I don't know what really drove her to understand that speaking out, even if it only affects, you know, if one person is affected positively, that that was enough for her. I don't know where that inner strength really came from. It's something that she was, I think, born with. It was either genetic or, you know, for whatever reason, the powers that be gave that to her. She would say the gods gave that to her. And she really believed that, you know, we all have a voice and we all have a right to be heard. And if you see an injustice, if you feel an injustice on whatever level, that you speak up, you say something, you know, you raise your hand or you stand up and make yourself be heard. And I think that is the older I get, the more impressed I am with her, you know, the more I realize the incredible amount of strength that it took. And I say strength and not fearlessness, because I think at many, many times she was terrified. I think she was scared a lot in her life, but that didn't stop her, because she really felt that you can't just sit on the sidelines. You can't just be, you know, she owed it to her fellow human beings, to, you know, to everybody who needed to, you know, to hear her voice, and somebody who might need help. She owed it to them to speak up. And I think that's an incredible amount of strength it takes to be willing to do that.
Yeah, that's a lot of courage. And I think about that too, because you must have affected your life in a lot of different ways too. I mean, how do you think your upbringing was maybe different, or, you know, had you had another mother, you know, you would not be you today, right? But what is the biggest thing that you think she gave you in your life that takes you forward? You know, we all have something from our mothers that we take forward that sort of is the driving force. What's that mm-hmm. one core thing for you?
Well, I think above anything else, she gave me the knowledge of how much I was loved. And I do think that is that humans, we need to know that we are loved and cared for by somebody, you know, whether they're related to us or not, that we matter. Right, that our presence on this planet matters, and my mother really taught me that, showed me that with, you know, how she felt about me, and I was truly blessed to know that during our lives together. But I also think that she supported my uniqueness. So if there was, you know, if I had a quirky whatever personality or some way that I did something that was different from quote unquote what the, you know, the norm should be, she encouraged it. Yeah, she encouraged it. Be who you are. She really was an outspoken person for be who you are. Human beings are so unique because we're all different. And that she thought was something to embrace, not something to try to change. Mm-hmm.
I think great. About your mom born on a cotton plantation, you know, didn't know her dad. You just talk about not having family and creating herself. And the power yeah. of creating yourself in a world that may not ever see you. She's a tiny person, but she made sure that she took up space any place that she went. And there was also very, very willfulness in the love that she had for you, but also kind of an erasure of race and all of the things, the obstacles that one could have in this life that she had to experience. She wanted to make mm-hmm. sure that you never did. Do you process that, Kit Shapiro, that your mom was very intentional about everything? That somebody that could be so dogged in creating this persona could also create this you in this way.
You know, it's so interesting what you're saying, because she obviously is a little girl in the South. I mean, she was born on a cotton plantation, as you said. They were sharecroppers. She had no idea that she was going to become, you know, this famous person. But yet somehow, I think from her youngest moments on earth, she knew that she, you know, there was something about her that she just kept, you know, moving one foot in front of the other. She didn't think that every day was going to be great, but she just kept moving forward. And I think some of that survivalist is just who she was. But I think that her deliberateness, and you spoke about that, yes, she was incredibly deliberate. She, everything she said, every move she made, and she developed that over time, obviously. But raising me, I think it was a very intentional, she wanted me to be, she had hoped, obviously, the world would evolve and, you know, racial issues wouldn't be what she experienced, you know, in her body. I think she liked the fact that she gave birth to this, you know, as she would refer to me as this mutt. You know, she would say to me, you're like a walking United Nations. You either break every rule or you fill every quota. And that you couldn't pinpoint, you know, what I was, who I was, because my mother didn't understand the need for humans to categorize each other because of the color of their skin. The one thing that is, you know, most out of our control, that was, you know, that people treated you differently because of that. And she experienced that in the South. I mean, she experienced that. She was born in a little town called North South Carolina in 1927. And she was referred to as a yellow gal because she worked enough. And then, you know, she's in the white world and she's not white enough. So here she is, you know, but yet because she was, you know, she was, what was it, one-tenth, you know, or even more, you know, obviously her father, she assumes her father was white. She didn't know she never knew his identity. But because of her chocolate-colored, you know, skin tone, she was treated differently by both sides in her mind. So she didn't understand how you do that to a little child, you know, how you mistreat and abuse a child because they don't look the way that you want them to look. And she didn't want me to experience that. And I mean, and obviously I didn't. And it's hard for me to be able to, given the way I was born. I mean, technically, this is how I came out. I mean, it's nothing I could do about it.
But I guess I think the question I would have for you, and you know, it might seem a little strange, but I teach about this stuff a lot, so I'm going to ask it to you. When did you notice that this was different for both you and your mother? I mean, I think that's that's always a memory that I have, that knowing that, you know, that moment you knew that you were Black and you were different, or you knew that, you know, you weren't like everybody else, or somebody said something wrong. How did you handle that? I mean, I think that's one of and how did your mother handle it with you?
Well, I think, you know, a couple of things. First of all, by the time I was born, my mother was already very famous. And I think people are more impressed with celebrity status than they are worried about, you know, the color of their skin. I think, you know, if Beyonce walks into a room, you know, they don't cower and racial, you know, and profile her. They go, oh my God, it's Beyonce, right?
Yeah, it's Beyonce, right?
I had that same thing, obviously, you know, growing up with my mother. She was famous, incredibly famous, internationally famous.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, and I never thought my mother and I were different. I mean, I wasn't blind. I knew, you know, we looked different, but to me, I look like my mother. You know, I used to point out like the different beauty marks. We used to say like, oh, look, I have this one. You have that, the same one there, the same, this, you know. It wasn't until we went to South Africa in 1974. I was 13 years old, almost 13 years old, where I saw my mother not just treated differently by one particular, you know, one person who, you know, may not have recognized her, but because the entire, you know, culture was, you know, was, the laws were so different. Now, we had VIP status, quote unquote, she was a celebrity. But the reality was, if you looked at her and you looked at me, It would have been a very different reality if we had been, you know, citizens there. So that was the first time I saw my mother. I realized that we looked different and we were treated differently because of that. And that was eye opening. And you know, and I didn't, and I didn't understand it because I didn't grow up with a woman who taught me that way. And it was, and I didn't understand when in the one particular situation where it was pointed out to, and she was asked to leave this amusement park that we were in, that I had been going to every day. And she was asked to leave because it was a whites only park.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, she got up and slowly and without making a scene left. And I was saying to her, tell them who you are. You know, he doesn't know who you are. Explain to him, you're allowed to be here. You know, tell him. And, you know, she looked at me and she went, you know, God may not be the one you want him, but he's always on time. Don't panic. Something will happen from this. And she used that. You know, I don't know if she knew that there would be, if she was sure that she could figure out a way to turn it around. But a few days later, she was doing a photo shoot. And the news photographers wanted to take a picture of the amusement park, take her in front of the amusement park. And she said, you know, it's so funny. I was thrown out of that amusement park the other day.
Oh
my goodness. They were just like, oh my gosh. You know, the owner found out, he was embarrassed. He was, you know, I'm so sorry, Miss Kitty. He didn't, you know, the gentleman who worked there didn't know who you were. Please, mm-hmm. if there's anything I can do to, you know, to make it up to you, what can I do? And my mother said, well, you know, we're actually raising money to, you know, for schools, for, you know, African children. So a donation to that would be wonderful. And my daughter would really like to come back, you know, with some friends. And so he sent tickets and he sent, you know, a check for the donation. And when we went back, my mother brought, you know, two children who were white and two children who were colored and two children who were black and myself and her.
Her new book, Eartha and Kit, A Daughter's Love Story in Black and White. Of course, Kit Shapiro, Dr. Anthea Butler is here. The stories in here are amazing. Because you think about many people have met Eartha Kitt at different points of their lives. You know, some, we can go all the way back, but some of us were introduced to her as Catwoman. She was the first Catwoman. Right. I know a lot of y'all, Halle Berry, blah, blah, blah. No, Eartha Kitt. Some of you saw her in Boomerang. You know, and you were like, okay, all right, Eartha, Marcus, we all. Some of you saw her in a cartoon. She was the voice in this Egyptian cartoon. I remember, I can't remember the name of the cartoon, but I remember she was the voice.
Emperor's New Groove. Emperor's New Groove.
Thank you. And she performed until she was in her 80s, right?
Yeah, she died when she was 81. She died Christmas Day, 2008. And her last performance was in September of 2008. She went right up to the end.
I didn't realize she died on Christmas Day. You know, Santa Baby.
I don't think it was, you know, talk about being deliberate. I do not think that was, you know.
I don't think it was deliberate, but I was just like, I didn't know that.
When the day she passed, I was with her. And I remember looking at my husband because obviously it's the least convenient day, you know, a person could die. I mean, everybody's like with their whole families, you know, and getting people to come to the house to you know, for the funeral home and everything. And I looked at him and I'm like, well, you knew that was going to happen. You knew she was going to make sure that everybody remembered that she was the one that, you know, that started that song. It was written for her. And yeah, so yeah, it was pretty, the irony was not lost on me that she died on Christmas Day.
Yeah, I bet not. But I guess, you know, I just want to ask you sort of this final question, and it might be a little bit of a hard one, but those of us who have, you know, really doting mothers oftentimes have felt smothered. Did you ever feel like that? And how, you know, I was looking at the pictures during the break of you and your mom, and, you know, I hear kids say, well, you know, my mom is my best friend. And I'm like, how does that work? Because I don't know that my mother would have been my best friend, even though I love her very much. But, you know, how did that feel for you? How did that work? Because I think she really clung to you in certain kinds of ways, didn't she?
She did. I mean, and my mother wasn't my best friend. I mean, she was definitely a mother first. And as you know, in the book I talk about, you know, she was very strict and discipline was a really important thing to her. And it's interesting that, you know, Karen, when you started to give the title of the book, that you said Eartha Kitt, and then you know you went back, it's Eartha and Kitt, because she would often introduce us and she would say, I'm Eartha and this is Kitt. as if I completed her somehow. And I think in many ways I did complete her, because she didn't know her family. She didn't, she was orphaned at a young age, and she was yearning for roots. That being said, yeah, there are times in my life, and it's not easy having, I mean, it's wonderful. It's a blessing to be loved as much as I was loved, but it comes with a lot of I don't want to say the word pressure, but at times when you're a teenager and a young adult, you know, you don't want to be the focus of your mother's, you know, my mother was a single parent. I didn't want to be the only thing that she, you know, had to quote unquote live for. She didn't. I'm exaggerating. You know, there were many times where, you know, I would roll my eyes as we're driving down the street, and, you know, and just wish that the door would open and she would, you know, just fall out into traffic. I mean, yeah, I was a typical daughter. You know, I was a typical teenager.
Damn, kid, not falling to traffic. Damn.
Sorry. Just for a moment. I think it all kind of relates to that.
No judgment. I mean, you know, no judgment.
Mothers and daughters, they're not, it's not an easy relationship. Yeah, I mean, I thought that there were times that she loved me too much, and that, you know, that it was enough already. But as she said, you can never love a child too much. And I was lucky enough as I got older and, you know, started to realize, yeah, I mean, it came with a lot. I mean, I was an only child of a single parent, and that was a lot sometimes, and I had carried her name. But I think I was just, and I talk about this in the book too, I was a really good fit, you know, personality wise, I was a good fit for her. And it came to where, you know, it worked really well for us, and we were blessed that it did, because it doesn't always work well for other mother daughters or fathers and sons, or fathers and daughters for that matter. But yeah, I mean, it's not easy. It wasn't easy, but it was still, you know, a blessing.
And that's what's so powerful about this book, is that you are transparent, you are honest, almost brutally so, but the love weaves through all every page. It is called Eartha and Kit. And before I let you go, that compromise clip, compromise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Beyonce has to use that clip, and Miley Cyrus just recently used it, and Jennifer Aniston. It really, you know, she stood as for a strong woman. You know, people look up to her, and a lot of young women, you know, in these days and times, even who aren't familiar with her work, do want to know more about her and want to understand, you know, how you can, you know, you listen to you follow your heart, and you stay strong, and you believe in yourself, and you be who you are, and you don't compromise for anybody else.
Yeah. Eartha Kitt. Kit Shapiro, you can follow her at Kit Shapiro. Eartha and Kit is the book, A Daughter's Love Story in Black and White. Kit, thank you for coming back. I appreciate you. It's been too long. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Hey, this is Karen Hunter. You can listen to The Karen Hunter Show live every Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. East on SiriusXM Urban View Channel 126, or anytime on the SiriusXM app.